Today I have with me Earl Bennett, who is a Christian musician. He's also a recording studio owner, a music engineer, a percussionist, and an itinerant worship musician. And for the last 30 years, he has been playing in worship teams and serving the Lord through music. Earl, tell us a little bit more about yourself. That was kind of a general introduction, but you can fill in the blanks and let us know a little bit about what you've been doing over the last 30 years.
Well, I guess the first thing I would say is I went to college, and that's where I kind of, the Lord found me, and I found the Lord in college. And I was studying music in college. I ended up getting a BA in music from Jersey City State College. And that's where my desire to play music was really cultivated. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a desire as a kid to play, and I played in rock bands and things like that, but it was really in music school where I kind of, the passion came out, and I had an understanding of playing music. Mm-hmm. When I came to the Lord, immediately I wanted to find a way to do it for God. So this was the early days of CCM back in 1978. Mm-hmm. Guys like Phil Keggy and Keith Green and Second Chapter of Acts were on the scene at that point in time, and the music was, and contemporary Christian music was very pure at that point.
Really is that what CCM is, contemporary Christian music?
That's what CCM is, contemporary Christian music. So, you know, the opportunity I saw was to be a working musician would be to be in a CCM band, mm-hmm. Or to end up working, you know, in the regular, you know, music industry, being a recording musician or working on Broadway as a pit musician or getting an opportunity to play in a big band like on The Tonight Show or something. You know, that was the kind of the dream you had, was that you were going to get a working gig and you could actually make a living as a musician. And that's a pretty tough thing to do.
Yeah.
Make a living as a musician, unless you make the big time. And most guys that do make the big time, they're there for a short season, and then they retreat into eventually playing in clubs and other things like that. I had the opportunity, when I came to the Lord, to start playing at a little church. And I was going to a little church, about 40 people, and we had an organ player and a pianist and a worship leader who was eventually became my wife. And I was playing drums. And we were doing it because we loved the Lord and we wanted to worship God with our, you know, our gifts. We felt those were recognized gifts in the church, you know, being a musician. And we saw people responding, and that's why we did it. That was that was the purpose of it. Mm-hmm. So my career has been from starting in a little church, playing the little churches, to eventually going to bigger churches and playing for bigger churches. Playing with some big, playing with some CCM artists that had records, recording in Nashville and New York, working with guys that doing some very short tours, playing at festivals like Creation Festival, Creation 90, in Pennsylvania, big, huge Christian Woodstock experience, and playing in worship environments in big churches and for conferences. I've played with worship leaders like Bill and Renee Morris, Ken Henry, Danny Daniels, a Vineyard worship leader.
Oh yeah, I know who he is.
You know, yeah, I've had the opportunity to be part of the bands that they would be coming in for a weekend, and I'd be a part of the band and play along and get the opportunity to work with them. Another guy I worked with doing a little touring was a guy named Mike Dacey, who was one of the musicians in L.A. who recorded with the Beach Boys and the Association and Elvis Presley and all kinds of guys like that. And we used to do these Yes to Life tours in high schools, and we'd, you know, play to the kids and then hope the kids would come out at night to the church and get saved, you know, that kind of thing. So I've had some pretty neat experiences playing with some high-level guys, you know, and it's brought me to the place where I'm at now, where I live in West Palm Beach, Florida, and today I'm an itinerant church musician. I actually get to play at different churches, bring my gift playing drums, because the worship thing has changed. Back in the early days, you had to be a member of the church to play in the church. But down in South Florida, where, you know, people come and go so quickly, churches don't have the right, you know, the high quality musicians, so they're looking for a professional musician to come in and play. And I get hired a lot of times to come in and play drums for a church.
Wow, that's interesting. In fact, that leads me to another question I want to ask you. In terms of Christian worship in churches. How has it progressed and how has it changed over the last 30 years from what you've seen?
Well, in the early days, we were doing it because we love the Lord, you know, period. Mm-hmm. And the music was not that big a part of a church service. I mean, there was, you always had the hymns, and the early days were singing little scripture songs, and the music wasn't complicated. Mm-hmm. You know, if you had an acoustic guitar and a bass and the drums, that was great, or a piano and an organ and drums, that was really, you were really progressive and contemporary, you know, mm-hmm. as opposed to just being a church with an organ. In the 90s, you know, the worship explosion happened, you know, and churches saw the potential in having a band, you know, a contemporary band playing up there and bringing in this rock style of music and bringing the boomers of our my generation into the church. And they started having services in very contemporary churches like Baptist churches and Presbyterian churches and as well as the non-denominational churches, bringing in kind of a classic rock band set, you know, type group in to be the worship band for the church and singing more contemporary songs. And that was around the same time you started to see worship music being played on Christian radio, sold on TV like Time Life, selling the greatest worship songs of the 90s and then now 2000s and in the new millennium. And you really saw worship taking off, and there was a lot of worship conferences going on, and worship was the buzzword. If you wanted to grow your church, you got a good worship leader with a good worship band, and it was part of the foundation of growing big churches. And if you look today, there's hundreds of mega churches throughout the United States. And if you look at the formula, it's a powerful preacher with a worship band that's very powerful, that brings the people in and almost entertains the people to some extent. You know, it's gotten to that level.
You had told me a story about something you'd seen in the 80s, you know, in terms of mega churches and rock concerts and things like that. I think you were talking about Stryper and a kind of revelation you had about that. Can you share that?
Well, I had the opportunity to go backstage and hang out with Robert Sweet of the band Stryper when my wife was writing for music magazines at the time. She wrote for a magazine called Modern Drummer Magazine. And we were backstage before Stryper went on. The other band was on the stage, a band called Loudness. And it was a heavy metal concert, you know, because Stryper was a heavy metal band, and their big thing was they'd sing their heavy metal songs to Jesus, and they'd throw Bibles out at the audience and stuff, and try to help, hopefully some of the kids would get saved, you know, it was part of their whole thing. And we were up on the drum riser looking out through the screen, black screen. They couldn't see us, but we could see out. And we were looking out into the crowd at the Felt Forum in New York City, you know, Madison Square Garden's Felt Forum. And I realized that it was like a big church. Kids had their hands up, and they're like, put their hands above their heads, raising their hands up high, screaming and yelling and singing the songs, and it looked very reminiscent of a big church service I had been in the week before. You know, where you had 1,000 people in church and everybody's raising their hands and worshiping God, except they were worshiping the musicians on stage. And the modern rock concert really is a worship experience, you know, except they're not worshiping the one true God, they're worshiping the God of music, you know, that they, you know, their idol. Up on stage, and it's been going on for a long time. You know, I heard Johnny Erickson once speak on her radio show. And just to give you the impression that we get for anybody who's a preacher, and I mean, I love Billy Graham, he's a great guy. But she was she made a comment about, well, Billy Graham in heaven's going to be so much higher up than I am. You know? And I just thought that perspective just kind of floored me. That it's the same perspective that people out in the audience or in the congregation have of the musicians up on stage. Like, they're so much more anointed than I am. Not recognizing that they have the same Christ in them,
right?
The hope of glory. You know, so they're just as anointed as the one up on stage. And I think this is one of the things that's happened in the American church, is we've glorified the platform. Like, the platform is the place where the glory is. When the glory is really in the people, in the church, because that's the church. The church is not that building. The church is the people. You know, and The indwelling Christ lives in each one of us. And I can't tell you how many services I would look up to the pastor up on the stage saying, Lord, let him have a word for me. Let him jump out of the off the platform today instead of jump to the people in the front row. Come to the second row and have a word for me and point me out, you know? When the Lord might have had a word in the heart of the person sitting next to me or behind me alongside me. They might have had a word for me, but I wouldn't receive it from them because they're not the anointed one. They're not the one up on the platform.
Yeah.
And in modern worship music, as the worship movement really took off, the worship musicians became very powerful. You know, and we definitely had a voice being up there on that stage to the people. And the people looked up to us. I was in a church in the early 90s. And I experienced, this is when I probably grew in my understanding of what worship music was for and the purpose of worship music in a way that I never grew in before. Had an understanding that we were broken vessels that the Lord wanted to use to play music through, to help inspire the congregation to worship. You know, to go to a place of going deeper and declaring the things of God. Because true worship music is declaring in a very vertical way the things of God back to God. You know, a good worship song to me is one that declares who Christ is, who the Father is, who the Holy Spirit is, you know, and is really causing me to open up to Him, to receive from Him at that moment. I know there's a lot of worship songs that are very horizontal, where it's about us and singing, you know, praises to God, but the ones that always touched me were the ones that were very vertical to the Lord, you know, and I was getting something from it. I was starting to experience that kind of worship. And we as a church were starting to experience it. And the worship team became very close, and we were all kind of together experiencing this. At that same time, the pastor decided we needed to change the focus because that was becoming a little bit too... It was touching some people in the congregation, but it wasn't really bringing in the lost. And his experience was, what he said to us was, I want you to touch their soul, not their spirit. You touch their soul, and I will touch their spirit and bring them to Christ. And he pretty much started dismantling us, and he brought in a different worship leader, a guy who was singing in bars and stuff, and had come to the Lord, but would later die of alcoholism, basically. Never really. He got thrown into the limelight way too before his time. He wasn't ready to be up there, you know. And he would start trying out other people, and eventually he got supposedly a very holy worship leader from another big ministry to come in and do it. But what he basically did was he dismantled the whole worship team in the over the next year, pretty much. In the attempt to try to take the glory from the worship team, you know, and manipulate it in such a way so it could be used for bringing... you know, his intentions was, I want to bring people in. You guys will bring them in. If you could touch their soul, you could shake that thing and get them to shake their thing, then, you know, I'll touch their spirit. And I just saw it backfire. He actually destroyed a whole... Matter of fact, the whole worship team pretty much exploded or imploded. And it fell apart. So I have seen that, and I've also seen, I saw another church where I had a good friend who was a drummer, and the bass player who was the bass player of this worship team of a Baptist church, where the worship music was not what some of the people, the big tithers in the congregation, wanted to see happening. You know, they wanted more of a traditional service, and they basically went to the pastor and said, listen, if you don't change the music, you know, and disband the worship team, go back to a traditional service, we're taking our money elsewhere. And the pastor immediately disbanded the worship team. And,
isn't that something?
And kind of destroyed what God was doing.
Boy, money. Money talks, man. Jeez.
But that was the early 90s. You know, there's still a purity there, you know, that was going on. Some things have changed in the years, you know.
And how so?
Well, today, to be able to say I'm an itinerant church musician, meaning people hire me to come in and play, is a whole...
That's interesting.
It's a whole different head. I mean, this started for me about 3 years ago. A good friend of mine who worked on my wife's album, played bass and guitar on it, he was leading worship at a church. A little church, a little startup church, didn't have more than 100 people in the church congregation. They were meeting in a high school. But the pastor wanted to have a kickin' band. So he hired my friend, who's a great musician, great worship leader, has a heart for God, but he's young. He's 20 years old at the time. Mm-hmm. 20, maybe he was 21, 22. He was basically bringing musicians down from the Christian college in Central Florida to come play, paying the guys like $250, the drummers, to come in and play. So one Sunday he couldn't get a drummer. He calls me up and says, hey Earl, would you be willing to come down and play? I said, Danny, anything you want. I'll come play for you anytime you want. He goes, I can pay you. I said, you can pay me? Yeah, yeah. Well, all right, well, whatever you can do, that's fine. Yeah, I'm going to pay you $200. I'm like, you pay me $200 to play drums on a Sunday morning?
Mm.
Yeah, you just got to be there at 9 o'clock and we're done by 12. It just blew my mind. So I went, and of course, because the people we were playing with, there was, I want to worship God. I'm not there to make the money.
Mm-hmm.
But I realized that churches were paying musicians.
Yeah.
And as I researched, I found out that that was what happened at that big church where I used to play at. They eventually got a worship leader in who brought his bar band in. And they became the Sunday morning worship
band. And these people weren't even members of that
church. They weren't even members of the church.
That's interesting.
They were just the local bar band, his local bar band.
Have you ever seen churches hire non-Christians?
Oh, that's very common in Florida.
Wow.
I mean, especially at the mega churches.
Wow.
I've seen some of the big mega churches actually hire guys out of University of Miami. Horn sections, or higher rhythm section musicians that are great players, but
not members of the church, not Christians, just up there to perform.
Well, they can read the charts. I mean, music's gotten, let me tell you the difference between worship music in the last 30 years. Back in 1978, when I was playing drums with this little church, I was lucky if the organist counted the beats right, the rests right, so she didn't jump in on, count only three and not jump in on my fill on beat four. Today, churches, big churches, they have these incredible monitoring systems with incredible PA systems. I mean, a church will spend $300,000 on a PA system.
Mm.
Not even think about it. $20,000 to have in-ear monitors for everybody on stage, so everybody's got a little set of headphones in their ears.
Unbelievable.
They'll put the drummer in a little booth in the back. He's got to hear everything. And they're all reading charts. And the drummer's locked in with a click track. And everything is on a clock, Every song, you're going to have your verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, chorus. It's all with a click track. The songs don't go any further. There was no extended worship. The arrangement was the arrangement.
Man.
And I mean, so that's the level of professionalism that's going on up
and
there.
And all that money for a once a week, 2-hour event.
Well, it definitely, it just perpetuates the concept of the system. This is the way things are done today. It's not enough to have people meeting together on Christ. It's all about the show and sustaining the big building, sustaining the big ministry, sustaining the programs, sustaining everything that goes with that church. So the $300,000 sound system is just an investment in making sure that their multi-million-dollar building, has a packed house. So I guess it's a good investment in their eyes.
Sure.
Do I think that they should be using the money for the poor, for prison ministries, for helping the widows, like it says in the Word? I think that's probably where I'd want to put the money.
Mm.
But today it's about excellence, and it's about excellence to show the world that we're, and this was not part of the church worship 30 years ago.
Yeah.
It wasn't about excellence. It was, not that we wanted to, I never wanted to do anything but excellence. Being a musician, you want to do the best you can.
Mm-hmm.
But in actuality, it was about the heart, for the Lord. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing that gets lost in it,
mm-hmm.
is, at least from a musician standpoint, you get to a point, if you're a musician in Christ, where you want to do it for the right reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Today I'm working with a church that I love playing with. There's a purity there. They bring me in because they want to have a nice worship sound.
Mm-hmm.
pastor's extremely talented in ranging horns and stuff. And it's a small little church. And, you know, that's what they know. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's the model we know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To stay on the edge of having a big church, you've got to have a good worship band to bring them in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think it's a shame that that's where we've gone to.
Yeah.
You know? But I guess in the mindset of this is how we bring the lost in, is that's what they do.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? And I know that there's something deeper there.
Mm.
And I guess that's what I've touched as a musician. I've touched deeper fellowship with God through music. I've touched deeper fellowship with God through being with a small group of people and singing a cappella.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? All together.
Mm-hmm.
More worship's going on there than being with, you know, 10,000 people. You know, that are all disjointed and not together because they're not meeting for the same reason. You know, they're either meeting because they want a good experience, they want to be a good show, you know, want to hear a good word.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are all, they're all noble things, but is it building a deeper walk with Christ?
Yeah.
You know? So the foundation of worshiping God in that little 40-person Assembly of God church in New Jersey, you know, with those, that small congregation just love God.
Mm.
To me, that's where the foundation of real, intimate, shared life was more important.
Yeah.
Than being on a big stage separated from the masses of people out there that I don't know, any of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't see me in my little booth back there. You know, I'm behind this plexiglass booth, you know, plugged in with earphones, you know, and a click track and locking a groove down, you know. They're experiencing something out there, but we're not. Yeah. Are we touching the same thing? You know, and
it just speaks of business. It speaks of how the church has become, in talking about the institutional church, experts in business to give religious goods to consumers, and people now choose churches not only based on, well, I like this preacher, he preaches better than this other guy, but also, oh, I like this worship team, I like the songs they sing. And as you were saying earlier, or a private conversation, it seems like every 7 years they get tired and want something new or something like that.
And they go around the mountain again, they go looking for something else.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's nature of man. You know, mm-hmm. The nature of man, if you don't find God, is to go continue to search for God.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of brothers and sisters that haven't tapped into the true God. I mean, they worship God, they love God, they're saved, they've accepted Christ in their life.
Mm-hmm.
But they haven't found the experience where they could say, this is my life, I want to be with these people the rest of my life, you know?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I don't know if we're ever supposed to be with everybody for the rest of our life. I mean, Abraham was a sojourner.
Mm-hmm.
He was told, don't dwell in houses, dwell in tents.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all called to be sojourners. We're all called to be tent dwellers. So there are seasons of life, and I think it's important. I don't want to sound judgmental to any of this stuff, because truthfully, I'm not judging any of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is what I've experienced.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know a lot of great musicians in those big churches,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of great musicians who play for money and get paid to do what they do. You know that our heart is big for the Lord, are bigger than mine for God,
mm-hmm.
you know, and bigger than yours for God.
Mm-hmm.
They love the Lord,
mm-hmm.
and they want to do it for the right reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But this is how they pay their bills.
Yeah.
I know guys that's how they make their living.
That's
God's provision for their life.
That's right.
You know, so not everybody that's doing it doesn't have a heart for God.
Sure.
You know, there are, like, when I do it, I bring the Lord with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why they keep asking me back at this one place, because they see something different.
Yeah.
You know.
That's right.
So
that's good. Well, as you look back on your 30 years of, you know, seeing the shifts and the changes in the Christian music industry and in the Christian worship world, what do you feel, in your view, in your opinion, what do you feel needs to change?
Well, I think the big thing is people have to get a foundation of knowing who Christ is in their life, and knowing that He is the God that wants fellowship with us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, He wants us to go to Him daily. You know, Jesus told us to pray one prayer. It was the Lord's Prayer. You know, and in the Lord's Prayer, you see the completion of having to forgive others, to be forgiven, going to God for your daily bread. He's our sustenance and our true food, you know. Pretty much laying down who we are and going and worshiping Him, you know, declaring who He is. You know, that's all part of that prayer. And that's the thing that is missing in the foundation of the church today. We're not teaching Christ. We're teaching you get saved and then you try to live these great principles.
Right.
You know, 15 ways to do this and 7 ways to be effective at that and 20 ways to have a great marriage. But we're not being taught, you know, Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, trust the Lord with all your heart, lean not on your own understanding, and all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will direct your path. I mean, that's a simple, that's a sermon in itself, that those two verses, you know. And it's kind of been my life verses. It's like, I got to trust God. Everything I do in life is trusting God, be it where I'm going to play music, how I'm going to provide for my family. You got to trust God, you know, and seek Him, you know, and then He will direct my path, you know. And I think we're not seeking direction from Him. We're seeking direction from reading the Bible in a way that causes us to look for, well, Jesus did it this way, so I'm going to do what Jesus did, instead of saying, Jesus, is this how you want me to do it?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
And Lord Jesus, You do that through me. I can't do it myself. You can do nothing but by the Father. I can do nothing without You. As He said, You can do nothing without Me. And getting closer to what Paul talked about, it is not I but Christ. That seems to be a missing message too, you know.
Oh yeah. It is not I, but it is Christ. And you know, when I've been with musicians that are living that way and worshiping God in that way, those are awesome musical experiences. They're awesome worship experiences for me. You know, and I've had the opportunity to play with musicians that have that humility, that just want to see God play through us, Lord. And the Spirit is like, it goes. But you know how many people are in those congregations during those times? 15, 20 people. You know? The masses don't want to be a part of that. It's too open. It's too free. God's going to do something, and He's going to speak through many people in that meeting. And I've been in worship meetings where we worship the Lord for 5 hours. You know, on a Friday night, we'd be in this little church, you know, and for 5 hours we would be there worshiping God. And during the time, people would come up to the mic and have a word, and another guy would have a word. And
yeah, that's great.
It's just opened up. But you can't let that happen and control it on a Sunday morning. It doesn't fit the 71-minute time frame, you know. I mean, they've got a clock down. I went to one church where they had a clock down to 71 minutes. You know, and this song will be 3 minutes and 29 seconds. This song will be 4 minutes and 51 seconds. This one will be 5:02, you know. And by the time we got done, the pastor's sermon was this, and the altar call was 5 minutes here, 71 minutes. And we're out the door.
You know, you got to get to Piccadilly's in time before you have to compete with the crowd. So we got to get you out of here soon.
That's right. Piccadilly cafeteria, you got to be there. Right?
You got to be there before the crowd shows.
There in Denny's, right?
Appreciate the time, and I hope that our listeners would benefit from this. I certainly was surprised to hear some of what goes on in the underbelly of the Christian worship world. I didn't know these things, you know. Even though I'm outside the institutional church, I have visited institutional churches on occasion and would have never thought that some of the people playing in the band would have been non-Christians who are being paid to come in there and do their thing. But it all certainly falls in line with the idea that Sunday morning service is in fact a show, a performance run by experts.
It's a shame. It really is a shame in some respects. Because that's not the heart of most. I want to make this clear. It doesn't start there. It's the good intentions of man, you know.
Right, absolutely.
I mean, God gives us, you know, God gave Abraham a picture that you're going to be a father of many nations. It took him 25 years before he had Isaac. And in the middle of it, he decided to have an Ishmael with a concubine. You know, he couldn't wait either. Man does not want to wait on God to move. Because God seems to move in a different time frame than man.
Yeah.
You know, and we live in a world where everything's moving at 150 miles an hour, and to sit back and get off that train and walk versus being on the train that's moving 150 miles an hour. I mean, Great things are being done in stadium-sized churches today, at least in the minds of everybody.
Yeah, right.
You know, but how many of those people are going to be carnage on the side of the road in 10 years?
That's true. Well, thank you so much for sharing with us. We appreciate you listening. God bless.